usually an exercise reserved for the end of the season. We're going to go ahead and do it tonight because it feels like the end of the season. I'm Glenn Naughton with Jet Nation Radio, JetNation.com. Be sure to log into JetNation.com where you can register and become a part of what is the most active Jets message board on the web. I promise you, we are not copying Zach Rosenblatt of The Athletic. This was pure coincidence. Tonight, we planned on going through the Jets roster. Chris Schubert, by the way, not here this evening. That will be dealt with accordingly. And Chris, hopefully back next week. But our plan tonight with the Jets hiring Chris Spielman and Mike Tannenbaum to find this team a new GM, with the team being garbage, questions about ownership, questions about which owner will be in charge, questions about what the owners are doing in terms of starting guys, benching guys. A lot going on in the world of the Jets. So we wanted to sit down and look at the roster 1 through 53 and say who should stay and who should go. And I don't mean in terms of like, well, I listen, to each his own, I guess. I shouldn't say where people stand on this, but I know folks tend to get really obsessed with awesome players. And a lot of fans seem to think that's all. I've literally seen people say, get rid of everyone but Garrett Wilson. Yeah, bring in a GM and tell him all he's got to do is find you 52 NFL players. As if there aren't other good players on this roster. I get that the team sucks. I get that the season's a huge disappointment. But does that mean I have to pretend Joe Tippmann's not a good starter? Do I have to pretend John Simpson's not a good starter? Do I have to pretend that Quincy Williams and Quinton Williams aren't a great tandem? Like, there are players on this team worth keeping. Then there are guys who we don't know about yet. And that's what I'll say about those guys. Like, I like the guy's talent, but I don't know if he hasn't proven enough, so maybe he goes, let the new regime decide. That's what we'll do, breaking it down top to bottom. I'd like to kick it off, though, with Dylan Terriman, who was not here last week, just to see share your thoughts, Dylan, on the current – well, it's no longer as current, but the stories out of The Athletic, where there were some claims made about the team, about players. And I will note I was going to bring this up tonight. Interesting quote from Aaron Rodgers, because we saw all the stories and rumors, which Dylan will address in a second. And Aaron Rodgers was asked about it. And he said, does this team have a problem with leaks? And he said, yeah, 100%. We have a problem with leaks. That tells me they ain't making it up, because if the stories aren't true, there are no leaks. So whether, and again, Dylan and I have talked about this, and Chris, and we kind of differ on how much we think is true, what we think is true, what we think is exaggerated. But the bottom line is, and I'm surprised Rodgers did that. But I guess if there is a leak problem and he wants it addressed, I guess that's what he's going to do. But I half expected an answer along the lines of, no, like, look, what they said isn't true. There's no leaks. But the stories came out. They said, Aaron, are there leaks? And he was like, yeah, there's some leaks. So how much is true? We don't know because we're not in the building. But clearly it's not all false. So, Dylan, what are your thoughts? I have some idea what you think, but share with the listeners where you are with this.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks having to rehash it a week later, because I feel like I've beat this point ad nauseum into the earth on Twitter. But I said to you in our DMs, 35% to 40% was probably true about Diana's reporting and Zach's reporting. And by that, I just meant like a baseline of pretty much every bullet point had a little bit of truth to it. Maybe there was a little bit of embellishing on some of these, like we've seen. Maybe there was some missing context, which we've seen, especially one of the biggest bullet points that she addressed in that one. But yeah, there were certainly some things that were true. I mean, Tony Adams got no snaps last week, so clearly there was something there that had to be truthful about it. And so for Rodgers to come out, and obviously I knew he was going to, you know, go against the whole retiring or not playing for the Jets in 2025 thing. I felt like that was like a shot in the dark kind of axe to grind little bullet point throw in there into the article. But everything else had a little bit of truth to it. Obviously, Woody wanted to sit Rodgers down after the Denver game. And that part is reported true, but not because of the reason that Diana led us to believe in the article. She made it seem like it was because he sucked, because Woody didn't want him anymore as the quarterback, but it was because he was really hurt and he got destroyed during Denver, and that was the case. So I feel like the initial reaction to that part of the story, which gained all the headlines, obviously, if it was given the full context, which she then described on her podcast, I feel like the reaction would have been completely different. Not saying the outcome obviously still would have been Woody bad, obviously. And I think that was the case. You didn't need the article to know that Woody Johnson's not a good owner. But to me, it came out as like Joe Douglas didn't look great either. Like some of the moves that Woody, you know, might have, you know, nixed the, like the trade to Jerry Jeudy. I feel like that's a win for Woody or whatever, you know. So maybe there's not a ton of moves that Joe Douglas said in the article that make him look that much better. Whereas like if he said to Diana, I didn't want Zach Wilson and I didn't want to get rid of JFM, you could have accomplished the same exact thing than all 8, 10, whatever bullet points there were in that article. But instead, he chose all these other moves to talk about and give to Diana. And maybe it was somebody else and it wasn't directly Joe Douglas, but it was pretty much Joe Douglas. So I don't know. Some of those moves, it's like, I kind of agree with Woody. Like maybe he should have stepped in and done those things. So to a degree, nobody looks good coming out of that article. I'm not surprised that some of this stuff has been, you know, like the Schultz reporting that the relationship between Rodgers and Johnson is a little overblown. He didn't go to dinner with Woody. So it's funny how like, we want to trust all these sources just because we emotionally attach to those sources, but still he wasn't 100% in his reporting either. And it was a different Johnson, which I think through inference, we just know it's Christopher and not Woody. And I think the story is that Woody and Christopher Rodgers and Adams sat down at dinner and talked about the future of this team. That's the reporting that I saw. So maybe there is a little bit of that. Christopher is, you know, trying to take over for Woody when he leaves after the GM and head coaching search is over and he goes into the UK to do whatever he's going to do. So I don't know. There's a little bit of truth to everything that comes out, but there's also a little bit of, you know, false reporting as well. And I think even from Roger's standpoint, everything he says on the Pat McAfee show is probably not 100% true. But when it comes from his mouth, you kind of can trust it a little bit more than if it's like he said, a third game of telephone down. And the whole stuff about him wanting to play next year, but not for the Jets. I believe him that he's going to give the Jets the first chance, but it also seems like he understands that the Jets need to want him first. And that's, you know, the big key to it. Like if he's going to not retire and play in 2025, he understands that he's kind of at the mercy of the new regime because none of those guys are the ones that brought him in. So his comments to Rich Samini kind of solidified that to me. And maybe if he plays well down the stretch, things change, but right now, I would say Rodgers is probably gone 65%.
Yeah, I think I was surprised because I do think a lot of that came from Joe Douglas. And the reason I think it was true is because if he was going to lie, he would have tried to absolve himself of a lot more.
Right.
He would have been like, I didn't want Zach. Like mm-hmm. you said, like he picked moves that weren't slam dunk, like Woody forced the Devontae trade. Okay, that was a popular trade. But to me, what wasn't popular and what really surprised me when there were rumors of the trade, I didn't think the Jets were going to give up that much. I thought they were going to give up a 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And the reporting is no. That's why the Jets got him. Nobody else was willing to go with a 3. And I think that was probably Woody stepping in and saying, make it a 3. Like, do what you got to do. The Redick thing, going back to last year, and we talked about this, right? Like, to me, the first – I don't know, red flag, whatever you want to call it. Like when they signed Dalvin Cook, I was like, that is so not a Joe Douglas move.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give $8 million to a washed running back who I don't need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like you had enough running backs on the roster. The guy had nothing left in the tank. The numbers were there. Number one in the NFL in carries for negative yards or no gain previous year. He was washed. And, like, there's long courtship of weeks of talking to this guy. And I was like, this doesn't feel right. This is not a Joe Douglas move. And that's when the Athletic reported that Rodgers was the one, you know, making some of these moves, that which I think we joked about that. I mean, we joked, but we also were like, well, you're bringing in Turner, you're bringing in Cobb, you're bringing in Lazard, and you're bringing in Cook, who Rodgers seemed very friendly with when they were, when they were out of practice together. But either way. Everyone comes out looking bad. The only difference is Woody's still here. And the issue with Woody, too, is I shouldn't even say issue. I think the most surprising thing in the report to me, that when I read it initially, the one thing that I thought was fake, I'm like, there is no way this dude is making lineup changes. But then when they asked Ulrich about it, he was like, we're not going to get into that. We had some conversation. It was clear. Like, and it was Samini, you know, confirmed it with another source. So, you know, Zach, Diana, whoever reported initially, whoever got it initially, Samini confirmed it. And then Ulbrich And Samini even said before, I believe before Samini confirmed it, he said that when Ulbrich was asked about it the day of, he said it was a really funny answer. Like, and I don't remember what it was, but they're like, oh, that sounds weird. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And then the next day, the story comes out that it came from Woody, and they ask Ulbrich again, and he just really danced around it and clearly didn't want to come out and say, look, man, Woody told me to. And I said at the time that it was, I mean, it's a no-brainer. Everyone knows that you're, you know, we all work for our bosses. That's what we do. You do that, right, or you get fired or you quit. That's it. But I didn't realize the magnitude of, you know, I serve at the pleasure of the owner. From Joe Douglas. I think there were a lot of moves that were sort of, you know, here, do this, get this guy, get that guy. But anyway, yeah.
The Tony Adams one to me, like, that's the one that makes you go, oh, typical Jets. That and the helicopter in the middle of Tuesday's practice. Those are the
moves. I don't have a problem with that. Well, I
don't have a problem with the firing.
I was like, why is this a story? I didn't get it.
I guess just like Woody making a grand entrance and like maybe he just didn't want to avoid, he wanted to avoid the traffic in New Jersey, whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
just
I like the practice when the helicopter lands, you know?
Yeah, the little, little things like that.
I'd take a helicopter to the fridge if I had one.
Yeah, right. That's just the little things like that that make me think like, oh, this is like a typical Jets, you know, bullshit move that like always ends up, you know, with the egg on our face, and we just can't get out of these cycles of just misfortune because we do stuff like this, like benching a safety that like is probably played schematically wrong.
Probably
and,
the best cover safety on the roster, probably.
Yeah, but he's used more in the box sometimes, and it's like, safety gets smoked. Yeah, if we used him the right way, maybe he wouldn't need to be benched by the owner. So that was one of my biggest things. Is like my takeaway is like if it's getting down to that level, that's like typical Jets stuff. But as you were talking, my biggest gripe with the whole article was the Joe Douglas felt like a hostage part back in January when they fired Rex Hogan. And to me, like for multiple reasons, it's just like it kind of solidifies my opinion of like not liking Joe Douglas on the way out, because the reason Rob Saleh got fired was because in weeks 4 and 5, he showed no emotion, no energy on the sidelines. And that trickled down to the locker room. But we didn't realize that it was trickling down to him from his boss, the GM, the guy he reports to. So it's like we couldn't see that part of Joe Douglas. If we knew Joe Douglas was mopey in the spring, we would have been like, all right, let's do something about this, whether it's, you know, hire somebody else to help him in the front office, which we knew wasn't going to happen after they didn't replace Rex and Chad Alexander, or like, and he's never going to do this because he's making millions of dollars, but like, dude, just resign. Like,
yeah, you're not going to be that.
Of course not. He's making six years, $20 million deal. He's not going to resign. But it's like, if you feel that much of a hostage and you have that much opportunity lined up for you, dude, like you could have had a job by the draft if you resigned in January when they fired Rex Hogan. And again, not saying he would have done it or was ever going to because of the financials. But like, that's the part that put the stranglehold on the team was like, he felt like a hostage. He was just going to sit on his hands. And I get it, Woody took over and like, 4.5 years of free reign. Eventually he's going to take over if the results are what they are. Tannenbaum came out and even said, he's like, I was there for 7 years as a GM and Woody only stepped in when we were bad. So
yeah, I saw that from Tannenbaum, but he's at that point, they're probably having conversations about the 33rd team helping.
I don't think that's the reason he said it. I think that's, there's some truth to that. I mean, I don't know.
While he's trying to find a coach for the Jets, he's going to be like, yeah, Woody's really tough to work for.
No, of course not. But I don't think Tannenbaum's history of his GM career, the 7 years, but I'm going to say within the first 4 years, he probably had no influence from ownership to the degree of Tony Adams being benched. So like, I would agree that there's some truth to the Woody only steps in when the team's bad. And we kind of saw it here. Like, unless you really want to go back to the Zach Wilson thing, and then Joe Douglas never really stood a chance. But again, why are you even here then? You asked for all these things and then, you know, I don't know. That's the part that stuck with me the most is the energy from the front office trickling down to the coaching staff, trickling down to these players. And it's everybody. Everybody's mopey. And that's the shitty part.
I don't think the administrative guys fire up the team. I think that is the coaching staff. You know, you always hear like the team takes on the personality of their coach.
Sure.
I'd have to see other teams that like if other GMs are out there like running around getting guys fired up, you know, whooping it
well,
up.
Well, I just I think back to like the big hug that Saleh and Joe Douglas had on the sideline after the Eagles win in 2023. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, that's the stuff. Like, they feed off each other because they're really close and they're really tight knit. So like, Rob sees his buddy Joe, who feels like a hostage, and it's like, damn, now Rob's like, oh, okay, now I don't really feel great about my positioning either. And now everybody knows they're on hot, like, thin ice, and the results are what they are. But I don't know. It just everybody's mopey. It's not a direct Joe Douglas thing, but like, where does it stop eventually, you know?
Yeah. All right. How are we doing, Wild Wave? Good to see you as usual. Tony, the GM's throwing out some names of guys he wants to see hang around. Mm-hmm. Eccles.
Yeah, we can get Rose, into that.
Charles, Yeboah are the only Irv Charles is on your list of the only guys you would keep. Tony, I gotta disagree. I think I'd have some other names on there. We're gonna get into that right now. We're just gonna go alphabetical.
Yep.
We're not gonna do like 2 hours on each guy. Some guys it'll take 3 seconds. Some guys it'll be a very obvious yes or no. Other guys that are questionable, like the first guy. Starting off, again, we'll do it alphabetically. Izzy Abanikanda, running back out of Pitt. I could see him leaving, but I have some bias because I was a big fan coming out of Pitt. But I feel that he's really only gotten opportunities in the preseason and then one game last year against Washington where he had like 9 or 10 carries, whatever it was, and it was probably his best game as a pro. Like, he's never had a game where they're like, here's the ball 15 to 20 times, let's see what you can do. I think he's one of the more explosive offensive players, might be the most explosive guy on the roster, just in terms of his, you know, his 40, his, you know, his 10 and 20 yard splits, his ability to spin out of tackles. No, he's not a power guy. He doesn't run guys over. He's basically, to me, I file him under, he's a guy who does enough things well that I want to see the next regime make that decision. And again, he's a guy, you'll hear me say this, you'll probably hear Dylan say this about a few guys. Let's get him some rep. Hey, Woody, step in and start, you know, not start, but step in and tell Jeff Ulbrich to give Izzy Abanikanda 12 carries one of these weeks and see how it goes. Especially, listen, if Breece Hall's dinged up this week, sit him and let Braylon Allen be your feature guy. Give Abanikanda 8 to 12 carries and maybe Davis gets a few carries. But Izzy Abanikanda, I'm just going to file him under, let's see more and let the next regime decide.
Yeah, so I guess I agree with half of the take as far as like, let him get some reps this season. I'm totally for that. He brings an element that I don't think anybody else brings. Obviously, if Breece is banged up, I guess my take on Breece is you play him this week, and then if you get to your ninth loss, you're probably mathematically eliminated within the next week or two anyway. So that's probably the time when coaches make that shift of like, okay, now we're going to play the kids because mathematically we're out and we'll probably see other people benched too. But yeah, Izzy needs some work down the stretch. But for next year, it's a take it or leave it bucket for me. So I'm going to leave him off my list because you already have three guys under contract going into next year with Hall, Allen, and Davis that I like a little bit better. So you can find a fourth guy as a camp body or whatnot entering next season. So take it or leave it, but I'll say leave it for Izzy.
All right. That brings up a guy who's probably going to generate a lot of conversation, Davante Adams. And this may not even be up to the Jets. You know, there was the report that claimed Adams told the Jets, don't trade for me if Aaron won't be there next year. And Aaron might not be here next year. We'll get into that when we get to him. But if I'm saying keep him or dump him, I guess it kind of depends on what you're expecting next year. I'm expecting them to be bad again. So to save that $29 million in cap space, I don't know that you're going to be able to trade him anywhere at that number. I don't know if anyone's going to take him on. But this team, at the same time, this team, they really could be a few players away from competing. I think we've said it a million times. With better coaching, they're in the playoff hunt right now.
Mm-hmm.
If they improve, both personnel-wise and coaching-wise, no reason they shouldn't be in it next year.
Mm-hmm.
So for Davante, I wish there was a pay cut coming, but there's not. But I say keep him, but I would have zero issues with him going. How are we doing, Dom?
Yeah, what's up, Dom? I think Davante is the biggest contingency for the Rodgers thing. Like, if you want Rodgers to stay, you're probably keeping Adams. If you want Rodgers to go, you're probably cutting Adams as well. Like you said, there's some cap implications. I think he's $2.9 million. I think that's savings in a post-June 1st cut. So if you're moving on from Rodgers, you would know that before before June 1st. But of Devontae, you could at least, you know, designate as a June 1st cut, make the cap implication a little bit less harsh as far as dead cap because of the Rodgers situation. So, yeah, I don't want to, you know, give away my take on Rodgers, but I think it's kind of obvious how I feel about him. So I'm going to keep Adams. But, like, again, I don't think that there's a part of me that would, you know, lose sleep if the new regime decided that they're just going to send all the old people, you know, into the sunset.
All right. That brings us to Tony Adams. I'm a little torn on Tony Adams. Like I said, he might be the best cover safety on the roster. Look, I get that it's all adults and big boys, and you got to have thick skin, but I kind of feel for the kid right now. I feel like the entire team's a huge disappointment, and the owner singled him out as the problem. Didn't demand anyone else be benched. So part of me is like, let that poor kid go somewhere else and go where he's not being picked on as the biggest issue on a sinking ship. Talent-wise, salary-wise, I think he's a good player who is at the very least a solid backup safety. So I would say keep him, but there's part of me that's like, just let him go somewhere where he doesn't get treated that way.
Yeah, you gotta feel for him. That's kind of a weird situation to be in. I made jokes on Twitter as to like why Woody might have wanted to bench him, but at the end of the day, it is weird. Ulbrich did say he's going to be reintegrated back into the defense, so I like to hear that. Obviously, it shouldn't have even gotten to that point to begin with, but if they use him in the right way, I don't see why, you know, any new GM or coach wouldn't mind having him. He was a UDFA, so he's cheap. I don't think he's on an expiring contract, so you have him for at least one more year under contract, if I'm not mistaken. So yeah, I'm not opposed to getting rid of him at all.
And by the way, real quick note, I did Dom's Project Prospect.
I have a couple bookmarked. Days ago.
Mm-hmm. We got to get him on here because 100%. You know, we got to really, I think next week we'll really start hitting draft prospects.
Yeah, I booked my flight to Senior Bowl just a couple hours ago. So year four coming down, I'm sharing the Airbnb with Dom. So yeah, we'll have to get him on. I have to start diving in. I've done, you know, just no work into the draft yet. So Senior Bowl, I'm going to be waist deep come next week for sure.
yeah, we got to get him on. Yep. Next one up. See, look, here's a good one for Tony, right? Here's Tony's very short list of guys to keep. Like I said, honestly, that's a bit of an odd list to me. Are you telling me, Tony, you don't want to keep Braylon Allen? Like, Braylon Allen is next up, and I'm keeping him. Like, I think he's going to be a stud back. He's the youngest player in the NFL. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. He can run you over as a runner. Braylon Allen's a no-brainer who I'm keeping.
Yeah, no, 100%. I'm keeping Braylon Allen. Just in the off chance that anything happens to Breece Hall, you want this guy. And I think a lot of the league is trending toward the two-back system. You see it in Washington. You see it in Detroit. Some of the better teams in the league, they're running two backs. So I'm a fan of it. I like the way they used him under Hackett, not so much under Downing. That's not to say, you know, Hackett's better than Downing, but that is one area that I thought they were a little bit more successful with their pony package under Hackett than Downing. So I'd like to see that return down the stretch and give Braylon a little bit more work.
All right. Next up, Jarek Bernard-Converse. So he's going to just fall under another guy that I need to see more of. Like, I want to keep him around because I felt like in the preseason he was easily one of the most, if not the most improved player from what we saw last year as a rookie. I see no reason to let go of a guy who's that young, who showed that much promise, who has some versatility to play safety and corner. So Jarek Bernard-Converse, I see no reason to let that guy go.
Yeah, I'm keeping JBC as well. Best preseason corner for the majority of the reps that he was out there. I know Stiggers had a good camp as well. But yeah, JBC seemed to be that first guy off the bench. Obviously, he's been healthy, inactive most of this year. But with DJ Reed most likely not coming back next year, you're going to have the hole at CB2. You're going to want some in-house names just in case you can't, you know, supplement through the draft or free agency to find that guy opposite Sauce.
Yeah, you hope between Echols, JBC, and Stiggers that somebody emerges.
Just for bookkeeping purposes, you said no to Devontae Adams, correct? Or you were like kind of iffy about him.
Yes, but I have zero issue if they decide no.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just making sure.
Honestly, I'm going to say no. It's the salary. That's a huge cap number.
Yeah.
If you keep him around. More manageable cap number, I'd say keep him, but no, I say let him go. Next up, tough one. Anders Carlson only played one game. He kicked a 4-million-yard field goal. So let's keep him around the rest of the season, see how he does. He keeps hitting 58 yarders, then absolutely, you keep him around.
Yeah, I see no problem with this. Worst case scenario is you eventually go back to Greg and you revert Carlson to the practice squad and then you keep him on a futures deal, or you just rock two kickers on your 53, because at the end of the day, that roster spot doesn't really matter when you're bound to be 3-9 this week anyway. But yeah, I say keep him. Just like Seibert last year, everybody's like, why the heck are we keeping Seibert going into the season? Well, it comes to find out in August, he was probably the better kicker for this team moving forward. Obviously, he's injured now, but just weird how things work out, and you never know. So I'd say keep them.
And next one's an easy one, I'm sure, for both of us. Michael Carter II. You already extended him. You keep him. He's one of the best nickels in the league.
Yeah, no-brainer.
Yep. Next up, Irv Charles. I could take him or leave him. He's been I thought last year on specials he was phenomenal. This year he's had some poor moments. Not been terrible, but not been as good as I'd hoped. But better than other gunners in the league. So I would keep him around in terms of bringing him to camp, but he would have competition in camp.
Is if he's on the original 53 or the active roster right now, I'd probably say no, don't keep him. If there's a way he ends up on the practice squad by the end of the season, you can just get him on a futures deal, sure. But I think he's replaceable as like a back-end wide receiver. I'm sure they're going to pretty much overhaul that position depending on what they do with Rodgers. So I'd say just get rid of him.
All right. So next up, safety Chuck Clark, 29 years old. Steady, but nothing spectacular. I think they need to improve the safety room. You know, he's a veteran piece, of course, but I would move along from him and add a safety in the draft.
Yeah, I agree. Safety is going to be one of those positions that I study pretty intensely in the draft, because we don't know if the new regime is going to value the safety position. We know this current regime, or the past regime, I guess now, they didn't really value safety, but I think moving forward, I'm going to put a little bit more emphasis in studying them. Chuck Clark, I guess, you know, he came in and got hurt his first year, kind of like the defensive Aaron Rodgers. He was a guy that was like reliably healthy for most of his career, and then he comes here and he has a really bad injury his first season. You don't get to see him, and then he's never really recovered and been the same as what he was at his former stop. So yeah, you kind of got to move on. He's going to be 29 turning 30 next year, and it was really good at the time signing him and trading him for such a low low draft pick, but just hasn't worked out.
Next up, I'm assuming we're on the same page here. Michael Clemens can go.
No, you got to keep him. You got to play him 42 snaps a game. You got to keep him. No, yeah, of course. Get him the heck out of here. Send him, trade him to the WWE for like a B-list ring announcer, and we'll be fine.
I still think people would be a lot happier with him if they just stopped playing him on the edge. I think he'd be a more effective DT than edge. And maybe you could have a different conversation at that point, but that's not what they're doing. No. Tyler Conklin, due to hit free agency. Listen, the tight end room has been atrocious. I think Conklin is one of those guys who is better than his numbers show. He doesn't get a lot of targets, but I feel like he's a reliable receiver when he does. My preference would be to bring Conklin back and to add a couple of tight ends in the draft. Or one in the draft and one for free agency. Good draft class of tight end this year. I think you can get one early, you can get one late. But I would say draft at least one, sign at least one, and I would happily keep Conklin. But I don't know. Listen, if you're a veteran free agent here and you've been through this garbage the last couple of years, I don't know who in their right mind would want to stay. So just someone wanting to stay would make me want them to go. I'd be like, all right, there's something wrong with this guy because he wants to be on this team. So get him the hell out of here. I'm fine if you keep him, but I totally understand if you let him go.
Yeah, I think this is somebody who's going to have suitors in free agency. So you might find yourself bidding for him. And then at that point, why are you bidding? Like you said, it's an aging veteran who probably, you know, would rather be in a new atmosphere environment anyway. I think over the cap had him valued at like 5 to 6 million. So like if you can get him on a 1 to 1 year, $6 million deal, sure. But I could see a team offering up anywhere between 6 to 8 million for him, maybe a 1 or 2 year deal, because like you said, he is playing better than his film shows, better than his numbers do. Obviously Rodgers just doesn't really throw to him quite as much, unless it's like in the flat and it's just a lot of garbage throw a lot of garbage throws. So yeah, give him a new opportunity with either a new regime or a new team, and I think he could do good. So if you can't get him back for like 1 year, I would say, you know, probably kick the curb. But he's somebody who I would bookmark as like, I would like to have him back if I'm a new GM.
Yep. Next guy, I think, is another no-brainer, somebody we both like. He's only going into his second year, Malachi Corley. I'm assuming mm-hmm. we're both keeping him, Dylan.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's still going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year, just like I told you guys back in July or whenever it was that I lied to you all. And I'm sorry about that, but I lost money on my bet as Offensive Rookie of the Year. So
I put money on three different players to win Offensive Rookie of the Year this season. Malachi Corley was one. The other was Braylon Allen in case Brees got hurt again, and Brock Bowers. So
yes,
the third one's looking okay. But it's going to be tough to beat out a quarterback.
Is it AP? So is it like the whole league or is it just like AFC and NFC?
I think it's AP. I think it's just Offensive Rookie of the Year.
So it's just the whole thing. Yeah. So that makes it tough. Even in the AFC, it'd be tough because of both.
Quarterbacks. All Daniels has to do is have two or three more big games, and he'll lock it up.
Bo Nix, man. Bo Nix might be coming for that title. He's looking good.
I'll tell you what. I laugh every time I think back pre-draft. I took some
watching him at Senior Bowl.
He might go top 10, and I think it was Sports Illustrated that had him going to the Jets at 72 or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, in what world is this guy going to be there in the 70s? Like, I'm in my mind, I'm like, I didn't say he was a top 10 lock, but I said I could see him going top 10. And maybe he, you know, Atlanta could have gone that way instead of taking Penix. Obviously, they took Penix, but I knew he'd played better. I honestly hadn't looked at his numbers over the past 6 weeks till a couple days ago. And it's like, wow, like 15 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Like good for him. He's really having himself a nice year. Ashton Davis, I'm letting him go. Dylan.
We got to overhaul the safety room. I think we both kept Adams, and I feel like that's probably the only carryover for next year. Adams'
depth, and that's about it.
Yep.
Isaiah Davis, I think core special teamer. I'd be open to moving on from him, but I wouldn't. You know, I'm gonna have a hard time moving on from anyone entering their second year. Like,
yeah, no.
Let's give these guys a shot. So
your third year, it's hard to, you know, like JBC. It's like, you don't want to get rid of a guy because he could be, you know, quality or just suffice depth in case of an emergency. And you need those guys. I know, like, we kind of got into it a couple weeks ago, the three of us, and, like, you can't have 45 new bodies on your team. So, like, the JBCs of the world have to round out your roster somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a handful of guys who I'm going to say keep that other fans would probably hate because they don't put up video game numbers and they're not, you know, they're not household names. But that's just not the way the league is. Nobody's made up of 53 household names.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Echols, I've already given that away. I said, you know, he's a guy that I'm going to allow to compete for a starting job next year, so I'm keeping him.
Yep, like 1 year, $3 million, I feel like is solid for him. I think his valuation was in like the $1.7 to $2.2 million range. So like even if you got to bump it up a little bit to get him to stay in-house, I think he's worth it. I mean, the fact that we have two interceptions on the year, they both come from him, and they both come from when Saul was still the head coach. I think it says something about his ability to take away the football, and only good things are happening for him because we play the Dolphins twice still. So there's a chance that he can, you know, increase that interception total against Tua.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Next up, linebacker Sam Eguavoen, who does a nice enough job, plays a few snaps here and there. I feel like this is a decent linebacker class. I want to get better there. I would let him go and try to replace him through the draft.
Yeah, he's almost 32 years old. He's kind of a core special teamer who's just played more because of the injuries at the position. So, yeah, he's somebody you can move on from. Like, maybe Zaire Barnes could take that role. But, yeah, I think no need for him at that point at 32 years old.
Yep. Olu obviously is staying.
No, you got to get rid of Olu. He's just useless. He's a bum. They should have drafted Brock Bowers. And because of that, you got to get rid of Fashanu.
Well, they should have drafted Bowers. But you still
You can certainly, you know, take those laps because Brock Bowers is just doing.
I hate taking them because I get at, like, I didn't even watch the game tonight. I brought my kid out. We went and saw a movie, you know, and come home, go on Twitter. The first thing that pops up on my feed, Brock Bowers, 10 for 140 and a touchdown. I was like, awesome, Brock. But I do have that bet for Rookie of the Year, so I was happy about that.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll see how that goes. after that, Sauce Gardner, who this year has been exposed. He sucks. He was never good. He always holds. He's a fraud, and the league is on to him. So I'm going to try to move him and see if I can get a day three pick, Dylan. You think we can manage that?
Yeah, I think if you could swap like seventh round picks for Sauce, I think that's worth it.
I'm giving up a six and Sauce in exchange for a seven.
I think Sauce realistically is the one for me that I personally want him back. I want, like, we're going to go through this exercise. As you can see, I want most of these guys back of like relevance to this team for 2025, because I still think we could be competitive next year, regardless, as long as you get the right coaching in place. But Sauce is one of those guys where, kind of like Rodgers, if the GM comes in and says, hey, I know I can get my best ROI for Sauce, even though he's coming off a down year, there's going to be somebody who offers me a high-end two and a day, like an early day three pick, like a round four or like high round five, or just a one straight up with like a pick swap on the back end. And that's probably the only person I could see being moved for like a trade purpose because of the value. But I personally would not trade Sauce. And I think you want to bring back as many of your star players as you can, not just because of the fan reaction of it, but because, like I said, you want to at least be competitive in 2025, most likely. I think no coach is going to come in here, see this roster and say, yeah, just blow it up, I don't care, we'll win three games and put ourselves in a position for a quarterback. I think that that's very slim for the coaches to come in and say that. So I think Sauce has to stay.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board here with Drums. This is what I was going to say. I think he's going to bounce back. And
exactly. Next year, he's probably closer to an all-pro than he is what he's doing right now. You know what I mean?
I think he's going to sort of take this to heart. Look, I'm not going to pretend to know, but there is a chance, maybe back-to-back all-pros, maybe he went to his head a little bit. Maybe he didn't push quite as hard this offseason. Yep. Maybe he is humbling to be like, oh, damn, all that stuff I did to be all-pro twice, that didn't happen by accident. I put in the work. And look, I'm not saying this impacted it. But late in the offseason, when he was posting all those golf videos, I was like, dude, I'm actually surprised. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, but I was like, if he struggles this year, people are going to be all over him about this golf thing. People haven't. Not that I've seen.
In the beginning. That and the streaming, his gaming, his video gaming. Yeah. But
I thought people were going to be relentless with the golfing stuff if he struggled. And I haven't heard – all I've heard is that he sucked the whole time and he always holds and he's been exposed.
Yeah.
Sauce Gardner, I think
there's an element of injury to this too, because in San Francisco he came out of the game and there was that whole weird thing where he wasn't being checked on by medical evaluators and he was just on the sideline without his helmet for a couple drives. And it happens on big plays, and I know this is like an element of like defensive – pride, you know, like they let up a big play and they pull and they hold up their ankles or their hamstring hurts all of a sudden, you know, because they just got burnt. But I think there is an element of he was playing a little banged up, and when you're playing banged up, and I know this is like kind of silly, but even like when you have an injury at your regular job, you're trying to focus on your job, but you're also focusing on your injury as well, especially if you do like a manual labor job. So little things like that, and it gets in your head, so that's going to affect his technique. Not making excuses for him. Seven penalties on the year is pretty inexcusable. Already over 350 yards allowed in coverage. Pretty inexcusable, especially when it's like Keyshawn Boutte in like the gotta have it situations of the game. But other than that, no, I think like he's still playing at a high enough level. Somebody told me the other day he's just running cardio. I'm like, that's a good thing for a cornerback if you tell me that. Like, yeah, the interceptions aren't there. And
what
obviously the
tackle Adams package. Wild Wave says he moves him if he gets the ball out of
the there you go. Exactly. If somebody's saying, hey, I'll give you all of this for Sauce, yeah, I think that's probably when I would change my personal opinion. But hopefully a GM trades him for no less than that. But, you know, I think he's the most valuable player in terms of what you could get back in a trade.
Yep. Next couple I think are pretty easy. Xavier Gibson, in my mind, can go. I really think he's here because Aaron Rodgers loves him. Aaron Rodgers raved about him as a rookie last year. Mm-hmm. Every time he's asked about him, he talks about how good he thinks he is, how versatile. He might be all those things, but what he isn't is someone who catches passes. But Rodgers, I think Rodgers has helped him a great deal, but I would move on from him. Brees, I'm bringing him back. I've heard a lot of people say trade him, deal him, dump him. again, you know, similar thing. For the right package, I'd consider it, especially since he's a back. But my plan would be to have him back on the roster next season.
Yeah, I'd say you have to bring him back. He's entering the last year of his deal in 2025, being that he was just a second-round pick. But I think he's another player where, like, you come into camp, he's balling out again. Sometime between August and October of next year, if he's still playing well down the stretch or, you know, to begin the season, you hand him an extension and you don't look back. I think he's one of those types of players. That obviously depends on, you know, what the life cycle of your quarterback looks like. Because if you can hit on a guy who's on a cheap rookie deal, it allows you to pay guys like Breece Hall at positions that aren't necessarily valuable, like running back. So he's going to be an interesting one, but I would love to see, you know, middle of next year, he's, you know, what he's doing at this rate now, followed up next season, and you give him a nice little extension. I would like that for Breece.
All right, that brings us to Jake Hansen. Not a guy who gets talked about a lot as a backup lineman who doesn't have a lot of experience, but I bring him back to camp. I think he's done a nice job when filling in. Him and there's a couple backup linemen who haven't played a ton, but I think showed a little bit of improvement. And we saw a couple of years ago how bad off you are when you don't have that seventh, eighth, ninth guy. So again, I wouldn't say camp body. I'd bring him back with a chance to make, with a real shot to make the roster if he continues to improve.
Yeah, if he could be like the next coming of like the Wes Schweitzer for your team, where he's just kind of your floating interior guy, first off the bench in a couple positions, maybe even second off the bench at a couple positions. I think he's taken snaps at center. So, yeah, you're going to need these guys. You don't want to just let all your offensive linemen walk in free agency just because they're not starters. I think you'll realize how hard it is. And, I mean, we saw it with Joe Douglas. It took 6 years to get five offensive linemen in place where it's like, wow, even next year we could have all these guys back. So you got to still keep numbers, you know, 6 through 9 on the offensive line as well.
Yeah. Thomas Hennessy, we never hear his name, so you keep him at long snapper.
Yeah.
Javon Kinlaw's on a 1 year deal. I let Kinlaw walk. I'm assuming you're.
Yeah. No need to bring him back.
He's frustrated. You know, there he has moments where you see the talent, but it's just not consistent enough. So for that reason, I think you let him go. Marcelino McCrary Ball, a special teamer linebacker type. He's another guy I would try to replace via the draft or free agent. Same for you, Dylan.
Oh yeah. Sorry. I said same as you were talking. Yeah. I'm not really attached to Marcelino. I know there's some speculation that he could be something, but I'm not really too, you know, pressed. We haven't even seen Zaire Barnes on this defense yet. So any other linebackers I'm not really attached to either.
Yeah. Will McDonald, obviously you want him back.
Absolutely.
They added Connor McGovern, so we haven't really seen him yet. I'm all right to move on from him.
Yep.
Braden McGregor, undrafted free agent edge out of Michigan, hasn't done anything really this season. Got some reps early on in the year and had a couple of, you know, missed him by a hair, you know, trying to get to the quarterback. I like him as a developmental guy, bottom of the roster, you know, 52nd, 53rd guy. I'd bring him back in that type of role, but I'm not saying you bring him back and he's playing 40% of your snaps.
No. I think if Braden McGregor is playing a role next year that was similar to what we thought Michael Clemens was supposed to play this year, I think that's fine for him. Nothing too crazy. 17 snaps a game, you know, get him in and like in a completely rotational thing. He's on the field way too much now, obviously, because of the injuries. But yeah, I think a Michael Clemens role of what he was supposed to be next year sounds good for him.
All right. Jalen Mills at safety. Let's give him credit. He's done, you know, he's done a nice job for a guy who came in off the street. At times, for sure. He's been the best safety on the field. He was a big part of that reason that the soft play where he got burnt against Indy. 9-year veteran out of LSU. I move on from him, but I just want to give him credit for doing a nice job that he's done this year.
Yeah, and Ulbrich even spoke about him and how well he's done in the short time he's here. And I said it on this podcast. I also said it on Buffalo Jet Fans podcast that if you're coming in the middle of the season and you're rallying the troops pregame and like the huddles and stuff like that, you're being the rah-rah guy. That's huge because it could have been anybody who's been here for, you know, the whole camp and everything. But it kind of goes to show the sleepy nature of the defense, but also like there's going to be some bright spots, and Jalen Mills certainly has been brighter spot than most people give him credit for.
Yep. Max Mitchell's a tougher one for me than you would think, just because I thought he was bad last year. I thought he looked much better in camp this year. Like, maybe he's taken a step, and I mean, file him under, try to get him some reps this year and let the new regime decide. I'm leaning, like, if you tell me right now I have to decide, I'll say let him go. But based on the little bit of improvement we saw, and again, as we talked about, the need to add depth on the O-line and not just focus on your five starters, I would be open. Let's say if I had to, I'd let him go, but I'm open to a return for him.
Yeah. See, if I was pressed right now and asked, like, if I had 3 seconds to make a decision, I'm probably keeping him. He's got 1 year left on his deal. He's probably your seventh best offensive lineman. If you add a couple pieces, you know, as like a sixth, seventh best offensive lineman, and he's now your eighth or ninth best offensive lineman, you feel a lot better about it. But with 1 more year left on his deal, I'm not going to, you know, just ship him off to save whatever it is, like $1.7 million on the cap.
All right. I'm assuming we all want Thomas Morstead back.
I have cap implications on him that might change your mind. Does $2.5 million sound pretty nice to you, or would you rather have Timo back?
I think given the cap hell they're going to be in, I don't think $2.5 million is going to matter a great deal. But at the same time, how important is a punter going to be next year? I'm just assuming they're going to be bad, but realizing there's a chance they can be good. You know, when it comes time to decide whether or not to let him go, I would say it would depend on what direction the roster is trending in. Like, if they think they're putting something together competitive, I keep him. But if they're being realistic, if they don't edit, like, I know you asked about him the other day, Dylan, and we'll get to him in a little bit. I was, every now and then you have these moments on Twitter where you're like, am I missing something? Like, what is going on here? And the other day I had one of those moments, and I actually tweeted about it after all the back and forth I had with several different fans. I was like, when did Tyrod Taylor become irreplaceable? And like, the thought of you're gonna cut him and have a $3 million cap hit? And I'm like, yeah, he's 35, injury prone, and not the future. And you're not winning any. And people are like, oh my God, I can't. So you're just going to dump Tyrod Taylor just like that? And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to do. A lot of people were surprised, which meant I was surprised. I'm like, I have no idea so many people view this guy as like a multi-year possible starter who you want leading this team. I think he's a backup who gets hurt a lot. And it pisses me off because a few years ago, when he was, you know, 5-6 years younger and he was on the market and the Jets needed a quarterback, I was, you know, banging the table for Tyrod Taylor. I felt like he was an underrated guy, not great, but he, you know, he gets you in the end zone, protects the football. He can run, like, he does some things well. And years ago, I wanted the guy and I like him as a backup, but people telling me you keep him around to start next year, I'm not doing that. So that's kind of, I don't know, that's a bizarre one to me, but you see these suggestions about what they should do. I think if you're going to try to be competitive, I don't know that he's the guy you're going to battle with. But like I said, Morstead I'm keeping. I got off track there because the Tyrod.
Yeah, I'll give my thoughts on Tyrod because we're coming up on it in alphabetical order. But yeah, I think Morstead is one of those, like, if you keep Rodgers, you probably keep the core of your team intact, and Thomas Morstead would fall under that. So it's kind of contingent with him. If the $2.5 million really moves the needle for you, sure. But I guess I would say I keep him because it's harder to find punters than you think.
Yeah, as we found out over the course of a few years, right?
Yeah, I don't want Thomas or Braden Mann or anything like that being, you know, walking through this door. And I don't want to waste
Braden Mann's top 10 punter now. I don't know if you knew that.
Hey, I mean,
each of the last 2 years.
I still feel good about the decision to move off of him, but yeah, it's funny how things work out, right?
Yeah, yeah. Morgan Moses, if he wants to come back and compete for a starting job and be a backup if he doesn't win it, I love that idea.
I would love to have Morgan back. I have the number. I would give him up to $10 million for 1 year, probably incentivized, you know, because he has to play. But he's been playing through injury. Right. He's an absolute warrior, leader 100% leader. Everybody loves him in the locker room. He's like one of those guys that even though he is aging, and it's like one of those where if you're going to rebuild, you don't want aging guys that are constantly hurt, but he plays through his injury at a premium position. So,
I think veteran leaders.
Yeah, I think you got to have a couple of those guys, and Morgan Moses is 100% that. I mean, watching him on film just like fall over and like take 4 seconds to get up, like, and then get right back to next play. It's like, dude, hats off to you. Like, you deserve everything.
Yep. CJ Mosley, aging veteran. I think I don't know that he plays again this year. I know there's talk of it, but when he
might play
that
this week,
game,
yeah.
Yeah, there's talk of him getting back on the field, but I think the combination of age, injuries, and salary, I think it's sadly time to move on from a damn good player, great leader, great guy. One of those guys you wish, you know, like I want him back the day after he retires. I want him back on the staff as a coach.
Yeah, right.
Ton of respect for CJ Mosley, but I think as a player, time to move on.
Yeah, so post June 1, he has $8.7 million dead and $4.1 million savings. So going to be one of those where if you're just biting the bullet, you're biting the bullet hard and you'd rather just get it all done with now. Right now they only have, I think a little under 6 million in dead cap just from Mike Williams, but there's not much other dead cap right now as far as over the cap is showing.
There's not dead cap, but there's tons of void money.
The void years is what they don't account for. Yeah, you'd have to like
go
through every
contract. $7 million for next year in money they can't spend.
So between the void and the dead, if you're just eating it all, like Mosley's one of those casualties where it's like, okay, we'll save the four, but we're eating 8.7, so we're really getting like 3.9 out of this or whatever the numbers crunch out to be. But I would say move on from him if you're going full, rebuild. But he's one of those veteran leaders that the coaching staff likes, and maybe the next one will, and maybe you don't want to eat all that dead money. So he's a tough one for me. I think based on the way I've been giving my answers, I'm going to keep him because I want to be competitive next year. And his other players at the position that we'll get into, they're a little expensive. So we have to account for that as well.
Yeah. I'm going to, let me see.
So you're out on Mosley then?
No, I want Mosley.
Oh, you
back.
Want him back? Okay,
if cool. He'll come cool. back. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
While we've Braden Mann, right? Last year, Braden Mann was eighth in the NFL in punting average. This year, he's fourth at 50.8 yards per punt.
Good for him.
Wild Wave says Madden top 20. I think he probably meant top 10, but really he's top 5. Becton having – I wouldn't say Becton's playing at an all-pro level. Pro Bowl, possibly. Wild Wave thinks the coaching staff sucks. I think you might be onto something there, Wild Wave.
Yeah, that's not a hard one.
Great job at developing their talent. All right, so who do we got up next?
We're up Isaiah at Isaiah Oliver.
Respectable enough, but I mean, if they feel like he can play corner, some slot as a backup slot and safety, then bring him back as a versatile veteran on the cheap. I have no problem with that. Also have no problem if you let him walk.
He was a regime guy for this staff. I think we're just going to overhaul the safety position in my book. So I would just move on from him.
And that's why I say maybe if they feel like he can be a corner and a safety, I like the idea of having at least one guy who can do that.
Yeah, that's true.
Give you a bit of both. Hassan Reddick, bye.
Yep.
DJ Reed, I just think do I want him back? Yes, but I think it's just going to come down to money, and they're not going to be able to keep him, knowing they're going to have deals for other guys coming up, and they're going to want to bring some other free agents in.
Over the cap has him listed at $6.31 million valuation, which is fairly cheap considering what I thought he would go for.
They're cheap considering his level of play and his.
I would pay that for DJ Reed, but the way his attitude has been since Salo left, it doesn't seem like he cares much about re-upping with the New York Jets. So hypothetically, if Robert Saleh became the DC of a team this offseason, I could see DJ Reed going and playing for that team.
All right. So obviously the most interesting one, Aaron Rodgers. I think the only way Rodgers comes back is a Jet. And I don't know, right? I mean, we all remember when Aaron Rodgers arrived, he took a $35 million pay cut. I don't know that he's going to take another one, but unless he reworks his deal and takes some major cuts, I don't see any way feasibly this team has him back. I'm going to break down the I know what over the cap says, and I know over the cap's great, but I have seen them in the past put out some numbers that weren't correct. And I listened to I always recommend it, Flight Deck, Rich Shamini's podcast, Flight Deck.
Have you? Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I do. I'm not like a, I can't do it every time, but like when I see something like a hot topic, I like tuning in.
Right. So, but this week's, did you listen to this week's?
No, I have not.
He broke down the Rodgers cap situation. And this is what Rich Shamini said. I jotted it down because unless I'm missed, I could be wrong. I think it differs from over the cap. So according to Rich Shamini, if the Jets cut Aaron Rodgers this year, it's $49 million in dead cap if they cut him before June 1st. Which I think is the move to make. Cut him pre-June 1st, take the whole hit, move on. You cut him after June 1st, and the hit this year is $14 million this year, $35 million next year. So not, I mean, $35 million isn't ideal, but it's not the end of the world. Post-2025, if Aaron Rodgers hangs around, pre-June 1st cap hit is a $63 million dead cap hit. Or, if you do it post, it's $21 million next year and $42 million a year in 2027. They could be paying Aaron Rodgers $42 million in 2027. If I'm bringing in a new regime, and as I said, I think I said it, I can't remember if I said it at the top of the show or just before we went live. You're talking about a 40-year-old, well, going soon to be 41-year-old quarterback who missed, had his worst statistical season a couple of years ago because of an injury, and then missed all of last year with injuries, and this year, for the first time this week, is not on the injury report. He has been injured for roughly 100% of his Jets career until this Sunday, minus the four plays in his first game. So you've got a guy who's going to be 42, has never been healthy, and carries a $62 million cap hit in 2025, barring a unfathomable renegotiation and pay cut. I don't see any way you would basically, especially again, if say he gets hurt again next year, which you would have to imagine happens, he will be 42 and coming off being injured 3 years in a row. There's no reason to believe he won't be hurt again. You're bringing in a new regime and telling them, we're giving you a guy who's probably going to be hurt and you're going to have to try to win with him, maybe with his backup, depending on how hurt he is. And then when he goes, you're going to be $62 million in the hole the following year, so you can start your rebuild in year three. I don't see that happening.
No, I think a lot of things have to line up pretty perfectly for the Jets in order to make this all work. I guess where I'm at right now is if he looks better down the six games, like you said, he's not on the injury report. If he looks more like he did in the, you know, week three game against New England, not saying he has to match those stats. I think it was like 77% completion percentage, 3 touchdowns, no picks, whatever. He doesn't have to show me all that, but if he can show me he's healthy, I think, like I said, I've been saying it, the next regime has, you know, all the authority to say yes or no to him. I think there's a world, though, where you keep him for next year. You hit on your rookie draft pick. You allow him to sit for at least 12 games, maybe the entire season behind Rodgers. And then kind of like what the Broncos did, they're eating $83 million of Russell Wilson right now, but they have Bo Nix who's playing really well. So nobody cares about that $83 million because you've completely canceled it out by having a rookie on his rookie deal playing really well. And you
and obviously would just out over 2 years, right? That's not a 1 year hit for Russ.
No, they took it all at one. I think they took it all as 83 all at once. Maybe they didn't.
I thought the big one in 45 or 50.
Maybe they split it and it's like close to 50-50. But again, like I think there's a world, like I'm not trying to pay him in 2027. So if you bring him back, you're cutting him pre June 1st in the offseason after 2025 and just eating all of the $63 million. But like I said, that's with the hope and anticipation that you have your rookie quarterback who's still, you know, coming into his second year, who's making very little bit of money to, you know, balance out that. So if you get rid of Rodgers and you bring in a Jameis, like you said, and we'll get into the Tyrod stuff too, how many quarterbacks is Woody Johnson going to want to pay that aren't on the team? You know what I mean? So that's the tough
part. $3 million this year. Sorry to cut you off.
I'm sorry. It's $43 million this year.
Russ is 53 this year. Rodgers would be 62.
Yeah. So like I said, so that's a difference of what, 9 million in dead cap there. But also when you look at it compared to if you cut him at the end of this year, if he plays like shit, you're cutting him at the end of this year. Like I'm not an idiot. The biggest of Rodgers truthers couldn't argue that. But the difference in, so it's 49 million in dead, like you said, versus 63 million next year. That's only 14 million in dead money. So like, does the next six games give you that 14 million in dead money of like, okay, he made up that difference and he's played better to kick the can down the road one more year. So that's where I'm at personally. But like I said, if he doesn't play better in the next six, yeah, you cut him, you take the 49. Like I'm more of the eat it all right now, all the dead cap, and we'll deal with that the next year instead of trying to spread it out more and more, because with the void years and everything that we've done, it's just going to, you know, we're going to end up like the Saints. So just eat it now and get it over with. But six games are going to be telling for this guy.
And I know I'm assuming when you say better, you mean much better.
Like Rodgers. Like, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean like now, he needs to throw the ball 10 yards down the field. He needs to like, let Downing ball
15 yards.
He needs to let Downing do the play action and the motions and the under center stuff. And that was the biggest tell for me. And he said it before, is if he can't go under center, that's when he's really hurt. And he hasn't been like under center more than like five plays a game for 3 or 4 weeks now. It's been a long time since he's gone under center truly. So if we see him come out in the pistol and shotgun only against Seattle, we know he's still not fully healthy, and then it's going to be tough. And at that point, it's like you might as well sit him down and just let Tyrod finish out the season.
Yeah, real quick, Micro Fox saying hopefully he plays well when you trade him.
Does not have
a no trade clause. And as I said, you know, a couple of years ago when the Jets made the trade, before he blew out his Achilles and spent most of this year injured, nobody wanted him then. I don't know what the odds are that someone's going to want him 2 years later, more injuries later, and carrying a ridiculous salary that you would be taking on. I don't know who would want that.
And if he plays well, like, you want to keep him. You don't want to – and I understand you want to get ahead of the curve and get rid of him a year too early than a year too late. But if he plays well down the stretch, it's like, shit, do we get rid of him now? You know, it's gonna create that dilemma.
For me, it'll be – each person will have their own take, but – mm-hmm. For me to risk a $63 million cap hit, he better be a top three quarterback the rest of the way. Mm-hmm. It can't be like, oh, look, he was really good for 6 weeks. Okay, good. He can go be really good somewhere else for, you know, I'll take a $63 million cap hit if I have a top three quarterback. Sure. If I don't, to be the ninth best guy in the league, that's just a $63 million hit. It's difficult to imagine that we live in a world where that's, you know, now that the Russ thing has happened, that a team might consider that. Next up, Jeremy Ruckert. I think it's time to pull the plug on that deal. Unfortunately, because I love Ruckert out of OSU. Obviously, we all love that he's a Jets fan. Unless you think, look, if the new regime thinks Middleton and the offensive coaches haven't done a good job, and let's see if we can develop this kid, that's fine. But man, it is rare that you see a guy in year four or five have the light come on. He's not really. I mean, on the one hand, he's not done anything. On the other hand, the Jets haven't asked him to. So is it his inability or is it just the Jets coaching? Like, how often do you see him get a target down the field? See, I remember one this year, and he screwed up. It, you know, would have been a touchdown. He turned around too early, didn't jump. Ball goes over.
Oh, the corner route. Yeah. Yeah.
Other than that, it's rollouts and dump offs in the flat. Like, yeah. Is he that bad that he's not even worth giving a chance to make a play?
Although the last time, I think
that bad that they're not willing to give him that chance.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it the Colts game or was it the Cardinals game where the first pass of the game went to him on a little swing route and he caught it, but it was ruled a fumble live and he didn't even like try to go for the fumble. It's like, dude, first of all, you're like walk through pace on the first play of the game when you should have all your energy and all your, you know, built up, you know, and I'm like ready for the game and he just wasn't. And then he didn't jump on the ball. So it's like, I don't know, man, like there's a part of me, I've kept calling him the prince that's promised because we're being sold that he's this ridiculously good tight end and he just hasn't been. So I don't know the cap implications. You could probably save a couple million on him. At that point you might as well. Cause I at this point I'm overhauling the tight end position, just like the safety position. So I would probably say Ruckert can go, but unfortunately, a good story just didn't really pan out.
Yep. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, I'm assuming we're on the same page with the next two, because we're over an hour now. We got a good
So I'm Jamie and Sherwood and
Simpson come back.
So Sherwood is a tough one for me because, like we said, we're eating a lot of money on Moses, but Jamie and Sherwood's listed at 12.6 valuation at overthecap.com. I don't know if that's necessarily what his value will be if he moves on, but if somebody's paying him to be a starter, he's probably making double digit money. So can you move on from CJ Mosley, eat all that dead money, probably have to rework Quincy and then still pay a Jamie and Sherwood? So I would love to have Sherwood back, but I think if that's his price, we're not going to see Jamie and Sherwood back next year.
Yeah. I mean, you could backload it if you know he's going to be like, you know, a 4-year deal. And not give him big chunks in year one and two when you're trying to navigate the Rodgers deal and the other guys who are going to be looking for big contracts. But, yeah, I figured we both want him back. Simpson will be back, multi-year deal.
Simpson will be back, yeah.
Yeah, Tyron Smith, take care. Mm-hmm. Stiggers, we mentioned you want him back, you know, second-year guy.
Yeah, you need depth.
Yeah, and same reason, you need depth. Give me Chaz Surratt. He's one of my guys. He's ace on special teams. And I feel like he plays well at linebacker when he's in there. He doesn't get a ton of reps, but when he does, he does a nice job. He's not perfect. No player is. But, as I said, not everybody's a household name. Not everybody's a superstar. But you do need depth pieces. You need special teamers, and that's where Surratt would come in.
I'm probably not keeping Surratt. Just overhaul the position other than, like, your top-line guys. All the depth pieces can be rearranged.
All right. Leonard Taylor, I'm assuming we're keeping.
Yeah, you need Leonard Taylor. I mean, he's going to play a bigger role for you next year and hopefully down the stretch too. I mean, the amount of snaps that he's not getting is alarming right now.
Yeah, great value as a UDFA too for what I think he'll bring.
For sure.
Tyrod, listen, I'm fine with keeping him as a backup if you don't add somebody else. I think they'll take a quarterback, but there's no guarantee it'll be a first-round guy. They might take another developmental guy and let him compete with Jordan Travis. The new regime didn't draft Jordan Travis. They might find somebody they like better. So I have no problem keeping Tyrod Taylor. You know, having mentioned him earlier, I just was amazed at how many people were like, oh, my God, I can't believe you would cut him. Like, yeah, I would. You know, it's going to depend on what they do with the position. Right now, here today, I would say cut him and move on. But if they don't make any significant moves at quarterback, then I have no problem keeping him.
Yeah, right now, if you cut him pre-June 1st, it's 5.7 dead, only 1 mil savings. If you cut him post-June 1, it's 3,500 dead, 3 mil savings. So the cap
5 mil dead, right? It's like split down the middle, isn't it?
5 mil dead if you cut him post or pre-June 1. And then if it's after June 1st, it's more of a 50-50, like a 3-3.
That's split. What I was saying, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It'd have to be a post-June 1. But with that being said, I'd probably just keep him and not sign a new veteran. Like I said, I'm keeping Rodgers in this exercise. So I'd have Rodgers, right. Tyrod, Jordan Travis, and then a rookie, whether it's round one, round two. And then you go into camp with four bodies and you trade one of Jordan Travis or Tyrod Taylor, depending on the landscape of the league, or if you don't feel like you need Tyrod Taylor because Jordan Travis could be your QB2 while you're waiting on the rookie. I feel like you give yourself more options. So I keep Tyrod for now and then see how it plays out. But I don't look at him as like a bridge, full year bridge quarterback. I don't see him as, you know, the guy to finish the rest of the season at that point, because like, if you're mathematically eliminated, sure, maybe you play him the last three games, but I would just let Rodgers play at that point.
Yep. All right. We'll do a chunk here. Solomon Thomas can go.
Yep.
Tippmann, AVT, Carter Warren, I'm bringing all three back.
You need your offensive lineman.
Yeah, I like that he can play both spots and has played both spots. So I think we're on the same page with those three. You got two starters and a potential backup.
Yep.
Then Eric Watts is coming back. I think he can, given his size at 277, if you had him add a little weight, I think he can move inside a little bit. And they wanted Michael Clemens to be the JFM replacement. I think Eric Watts can be that type of, I don't know, be on JFM's level, but I think give you that versatility. The next three no-brainers, Quincy and Quinnen Williams and Garrett Wilson. Now, Garrett, and I said this, Dylan, I think the first time I mentioned this, I don't know why it sticks out in my head. I feel like when I did that solo episode when I was on vacation in Bruges, I could be wrong. For some reason, that pops out in my head. But I said a while back, looking at, I feel like all of the losing, I don't think it takes a toll. I don't think it takes a bigger toll on anyone than Garrett Wilson. He seems to be the unhappiest, and I'm not knocking him for this. I don't blame him. I think he's that competitive. Sometimes I watch that guy in a post-game press conference, and I'm like, I think he's about to retire. Like, he seems that unhappy. And I could – I'm not saying this will happen, but I could 100% see him going to the Jets and saying, trade me. And which the Jets could say, no. But also, with a new regime, might they look at each other and go, this dude could net us 2 first-round picks. Like, let's move him and hit the reset button with a new receiver with one of those ones and then have another one to use on somebody else. So I could see a deal happening. You're moving a guy who you're not going to have to pay an insane amount of money. But, yes, I want Garrett Wilson back. Could see him moving on via trade. Quincy and Quinnen are no-brainers.
Yeah, no, you're not doing anything with the Williams brothers except paying Quincy more. Quinnen has come on as of late. He looks like an all-pro player the last, like, month and a half of the season. Yep. Garrett, yeah, I mean, to me, you're going to offer him his fifth-year option. You're going to you're going to do that. That's a no-brainer. What you do from there, obviously, I feel like it's kind of split. I don't think a new regime will want to hamstring any quarterback that they choose by getting rid of Garrett Wilson. So if it was up to me, I would, you know, give him the fifth-year option or just extend him. And I was looking at the Aiyuk deal, which is 4 for $130, which is, I think, the most recent big-name wide receiver to sign. I don't necessarily think Garrett's going to do, you know, be a full $30 million-a-year guy. I kind of fell at 4 years, $102 million. So that's $110 million, excuse me. So that's $27 million a year. Kind of feels right. I think that's like 12th or 13th highest in the league.
Yeah.
About where he is. But it, like I said, it gives more of a confidence boost to whoever the quarterback is for the future that you don't have the Sam Darnold treatment where it's like you're throwing to Jermaine Kearse and Robbie Anderson and stuff like that. So that's what I would do with Garrett. But I think at a minimum, you no-brainer have to give him the fifth-year option, just like Sauce and Jermaine.
My concern is that Garrett looks around and says, on a better team with better coaches, I am a 4-year $130 million. You know, I am like the reason I'm a $27 million a year guy is because I'm a Jet. If I were a Kansas City Chief, you know, then I'd be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. Because that's when you're a top guy and you come to free agency, you become the top paid guy. It doesn't matter if you're the best guy. You just have to be the best guy in the market.
Yeah, for the most part, that happens. You know, if you're in that discussion, I think that's going to be more of like the Sauce conversation. Like, he's probably going to be the highest paid corner whenever he gets paid. I'd never really thought that with Garrett, even with Rodgers coming in, that he would be at any time the highest paid wide receiver because you have like the Justin Jeffersons of the world. But yeah, I mean, that's always a possibility. I would just hope that he likes the team enough to stay around. I'm not saying that he does or doesn't. It's easy to, you know, see his demeanor and say that he doesn't want to be here. It's really upsetting when, you know, the tone of the voice in all the players changes in the press conferences. I mean, it changes for the content creators like you and I on YouTube. Like, we are a lot more enthusiastic after week three than we are right now. You know what I mean? It's tough. It's a tough situation, but I would just hope that a soft rebuild doesn't deter him, kind of like what Wild Wave is saying in the comments.
Yeah, and a big part of it will be, do you bring in a new coach? Again, we keep saying, do you bring in an offensive coach who can sell Garrett on the vision and say, look, I understand your frustration if it's a Todd Monken. And Todd Monken says, you won't find a quarterback who's played for me in the last 20 years who didn't play his best football. Everyone plays their best football when I'm their coach. That's going to mean you're going to produce your best numbers ever. Like, maybe that does it. But maybe Garrett's like, you know what? That's what they told me when Aaron got here. And that didn't happen. So I'm ready to move. So
hopefully we'll, he's like Terry McLaurin and like he just sticks through all the hard times and then he's finally rewarded with a good quarterback. And it's like, you know, this is why he stayed. And you actually, you know, you feel for him. And I think Terry went to Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken. So hopefully he just holds out one more year and they get the quarterback that helps him. Or Rodgers just plays better down the stretch and gives you all hope for next year.
Yeah, we will see what happens there. Last but not least, Kenny Yeboah, a guy who I, you know, I've I really liked coming out of college. I thought he'd be worth a day three pick. He ends up going undrafted. Scored his first touchdown and got married in the same week. So congratulations to Kenny.
Oh, Yobo. Hell yeah.
You know, that's a lot of years in waiting for him. I think he's another guy. And I tweeted after he scored, like, you look at what he did in college. I don't think Jets fans realize he's fast and athletic because he never gets the ball. And I look at him, I'm like, if he's a guy, if he goes to, you know, the right system and he gets some targets, he might be a player. So I think because the salary is so low and the athletic potential is there, I would have no problem bringing him back. But as I said earlier, I still want to draft a tight end and maybe sign one, maybe draft two. Like,
yeah.
If I bring him back, he's coming back as my fourth guy and he's got to fight for a roster spot because I want to add – there's just, I love this tight end class. When I did Dom's show the other day, we talked about the depth. There's some really good tight ends in this class. And whether you go early, you know, first, second round, or if you get a guy in the mid rounds, I think there'll be some players there.
Yeah. No, I think if you went into the season with Conklin and Yeboah and then added two bodies, you're going to have better results at the tight end position than you currently have.
Yeah. Yeah. Which wouldn't be saying a whole lot. Real quick before we go, even though they're not on the roster, we talked about this. Guys will get tagged, you know, they'll get you know, futures contracts and things like that. Guys, I would like to see hang around and get increased opportunities. Jason Brownlee, of course. Zach Kuntz, I'd like to see him get some run this year. I don't know that that'll happen. Who knows what the hell this team is going to do? Cole Laveau, who I thought had himself a great camp. Those are probably the top three guys, and Obinna Ezzi, the offensive tackle out of TCU. If you go back and watch him in college, he's got really good size, raw prospect, didn't play the game till later on in a high school, college career. So he was sort of learning on the fly. Those are guys that I would definitely like to see back. I'm sure most or all of them will be. Any thoughts, names you want to throw out, Dylan, before we wrap up?
Yeah, I like Dabina Ezzi also. He gives you that extra practice squad spot at the worst because he's an international player. They just got Zonovan Knight back. That doesn't really move the needle for me. Zach Kuntz, yeah, I'd probably keep around again one more year. Cole Laveau, just because of the offensive line depth, like you were mentioning. Jarius Monroe, I feel like he's somebody that I would love to see elevated one more time.
You and I had him making the 53.
He had the one
– at him, and he didn't, but
– he had that awful whiff on Jacoby Brissett on the play that Keyshawn Booty beat Sauce at the end of that game. That was his only biggest flaw in the season, but I'd like to see him elevated and given more opportunity. And then there was one more, Kune Nwangu. I know he's a four-year player from the Vikings, running back. I thought he was really explosive coming out of Iowa State, so I would like to see him too, right? As a return guy, just a return option, because Xavier Gibson's not doing it for me. But other than that, there's really nobody that, like, moves the needle for me. I know we didn't talk about the reserve guys who are injured, but Jermaine Johnson, you're obviously keeping. Alan Lazard, what do you think? I'm moving on. Even if you keep Rodgers, I'm moving on from Lazard.
I should have mentioned him because, you know, I thought about him as a big question mark. What is his salary next year?
I know all the remaining
guarantees
are done.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man, with the way he has played and with the price of a quality wide receiver, Alan Lazard for $13 million, I'm bringing him back.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I don't know, like, how much you would save by cutting him outright, how much of that 13, but I guess
I can tell you right now.
If it's less than $9 million, I'm probably keeping him.
It would say it's about down the middle. 6.5 dead money.
Then I'm keeping him. If you're saving 10 or more, then I'm getting rid of him to sign Jacoby Myers. But
same if you were saving a big chunk like that.
Yeah. But he's probably back for one more year. Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, it's just same as I said with Corey Davis, even though he ended up retiring, right?
Yep.
People are like, oh, he's got to go. And like, you look at what receivers are making. Lazard's having a career year. I would, for that money, I would bring him back.
Two more guys then. Xavier Newman, I'm bringing back. And then Greg Zuerlein, I'm not bringing back regardless.
Nope.
So.
Nope. All right, that's it. That wraps it up. So, for all the tear it down, get rid of everybody, clean house, like, let's be real, folks. You're not hiring a new GM and telling him he has to acquire 50 players.
I kept 37, you kept 36, and the one extra for me was Rodgers. So 37 out of 53 people, you're bringing in 16 new bodies onto your 53. You have a draft class of 7, 8, 9 guys. You know, 6 to 9 guys, we'll say 6 right. in case they trade, but 6 to 9 guys, then you add 8 to 10 free agents / UDFAs. You got yourself a 53-man roster, and you didn't really need to tear everything down.
Yeah. All right. Well, there
great
we
exercise.
Go. We fixed the Jets. We're ready to roll for 2025. Have a good one, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for checking us out. We will be back next week, hopefully all three of us, talking about – listen, the Seattle game is going to be tough. That trio of receivers. I know Tyler Lockett's not going to go off for like 500 yards the rest of the way, but they have a really good chance for those three guys to combine for 3,000 yards. JSN is on pace for 1,000. I believe Metcalf is on pace for 1,000. And Lockett is sitting at around 550 with 7 games to go. So don't be – and JSN the last 3 or 4 games has been unstoppable. He's been a monster. Look at his numbers from the last 3 or 4 games if you haven't. He's been an absolute force. So I think those three guys could be on pace for a total of 3,000 yards by the time the season ends, which is just wild. So the Jets, hopefully, I'm hoping, not that it'll matter, but part of me is like, I really hope Sauce spent this 2 weeks just absolutely busting his ass and comes out the rest of the season and plays like the guy he was the first couple of years, just as I hope Rodgers does. And let's see some entertaining, fun football.
100%. He can get under DK's skin if he locks him down too. I know DK has been a little bit of a hot hands when he gets locked down.
Well with others.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a chance. I mean, last week we said whatever the Colts do to the Jets, I kind of similarly echo that this week, but I mean, that's where we're at. We're 3-8. We don't deserve the benefit of the doubt, but again, if Rodgers plays healthy enough and the offense looks fine, you know, they do more downing things than Rodgers things, which is scary to say, they might actually win.
Tomas, by the way, thank you, says we would do a better job than Joe Douglas or any other jackass Woody would pick.
I appreciate that.
Look, I say all the time, I try not to, you know, give myself too much credit. This is a hobby because it's fun, because I like football, but man, there are days, and I said this, I can't remember if I said it to you, Dill, I said this to someone the other day, I said, for all the defending I've done of Joe Douglas, there's a lot of picks that I like. If I would have gone with the way I wanted, the team would be much better off.
Yeah, 100%.
But you know that I mean,
I think if you gave you and I 6 years, we could probably win 30 games.
Probably, yeah. Not
5 a year.
And let me hire the coach.
100%.
And guys, but guys got to stay healthy.
100%.
You know, I said to someone the other day, it still kills me, man. I remember after the AVT and Becton picks, because I think I could be wrong, but I think probably the most respected draft guy out there is Daniel Jeremiah. And I was listening to him after those picks, and he said, this is going to be for the Jets the next era of Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson. Like, Becton and AVT are going to just be dominant, and they're going to run behind them all day.
Yeah.
And they couldn't stay healthy. So that was the end of that dream. But anyway, we'll wrap this one up. Have a good one, Jets fans. We will catch you next week.